What if I told you that your disgust at stepping in dog poop shares deep connections with ancient religious taboos? Mary Douglas's groundbreaking work, Purity and Danger, revolutionized our understanding of something seemingly mundane, dirt. Far from being a dry academic text, this influential anthropological work has shaped fields from religious studies to risk management, with figures from Jacques Derrida to Lady Gaga citing its influence. At its core lies a deceptively simple insight. Dirt isn't a scientific category of harmful substances. It's fundamentally about order and classification. Dirt is matter out of place. Shoes aren't inherently dirty, but shoes on a dining table violate our sense of proper order. Food isn't dirty, but cooking implements in a bedroom feel wrong. These reactions reveal our pattern-making tendency, where we construct stable worlds by selecting stimuli that fit our established assumptions and rejecting those that don't. Different cultures have radically different conceptions of pollution. The Havik Brahmin of India follow elaborate rules where cooked food carries pollution, saliva of defiling, and regulations govern caste interactions. While these might seem like hygiene measures to Westerners, they're symbolic systems expressing social order. When we clean our homes, we're not just eliminating bacteria, we're reordering our environment according to cultural patterns. Spring cleaning rituals function like renewal rites in traditional societies, creating boundaries and making statements about the home. This perspective moves beyond medical materialism, the tendency to explain ritual practices as misguided hygiene attempts. Some scholars argue ancient rites have hygienic foundations. Others view primitive hygiene as erroneous compared to modern understanding. Both approaches fail by ignoring the symbolic dimensions of all human pollution concepts. The difference isn't that primitive rituals are symbolic while ours are practical, but that primitive rituals create one symbolically consistent universe while ours create many unrelated subworlds. Why does Leviticus forbid pork but allow beef? Why are locusts acceptable but not rabbits? Scholars typically interpret these dietary prohibitions as arbitrary rules, allegories for virtues and vices, or protections against foreign religious practices. These interpretations fail because they examine prohibitions individually rather than as a coherent system. The answer lies in the concept of holiness, completeness, order, and maintaining distinct categories of creation. The classification follows Genesis's threefold division: air, water, and earth. Each element has its proper creatures with appropriate locomotion. Birds fly with wings in air, fish swim with fins in water, and four-legged animals walk on earth. Creatures with inappropriate movement for their element are deemed unclean. Clean livestock, cattle, sheep, goats, were integrated into the divine order through blessing. Animals failing to meet both criteria of being cloven-hoofed and cud-chewing were excluded. The pig's uncleanness stemmed from this classification failure, not its scavenging habits. Through these rules, holiness was expressed in every meal, forming a coherent, symbolic system reflecting cosmic order. Anthropologists have often misunderstood ritual. The Kung Bushmen laugh when researchers ask if their rain rituals actually produce rainfall, while the Dinka use malaria-curing ceremonies when the disease naturally subsides, yet still visit clinics. These misunderstandings stem from Western assumptions that indigenous peoples lack true religion and Christianity's view that codified practices betray genuine interior faith. It's misguided to imagine religion can exist purely internally. As social creatures, humans are inherently ritual beings. When suppressed in one form, ritual emerges elsewhere. Even friendship requires symbolic acts like condolence letters to maintain bonds. As Douglas notes, it is impossible to have social relations without symbolic acts. Ritual serves essential functions, creating frames that mark special realities, aiding memory by connecting present to past, and actively shaping experience rather than merely expressing it. Like language, ritual doesn't just externalize thoughts, but forms them. Some experiences only exist through ritual. the sequence of weekdays creates meaning through pattern, making Tuesday imperceptible without having formally acknowledged Monday. The human body serves as a powerful model for bounded systems, symbolizing threatened social boundaries, while its internal structure mirrors social and cultural structures. Rituals involving bodily substances can only be understood by recognizing the body as a sophisticated symbol of society, reproducing social powers, dangers, and hierarchies in microcosm. Bodily margins are viewed as dangerous across cultures because all margins, physical, social, or symbolic, represent points of transition and vulnerability. Body orifices symbolize vulnerability as portals between worlds, while substances crossing bodily boundaries, spittle, blood, milk, urine, feces, tears, sweat, exist as marginal substances between categories. Cultures emphasize specific bodily pollutions based on their particular social risks. The body functions not merely as an expression of personal concerns, but as a symbol of the entire social order, especially power relations and group boundaries. The Korgs of South India demonstrate this through their vigilance against impurities entering their system, treating the body like a besieged town. Their foundational myth about a goddess defeated by accidentally reconsuming her own Betelgeuse establishes their core principle. Anything expelled from the body must never re-enter, extending to social boundaries as well. Pollution rules function as effective social control mechanisms through their binary nature. Unlike nuanced moral rules, pollution is straightforward. Contamination either happened or didn't, making these rules particularly powerful. These beliefs reinforce moral codes in four ways: providing concrete guidelines for morally ambiguous situations, offering simplified frameworks when moral principles conflict, amplifying the perceived severity of certain offenses, and creating psychological deterrence where enforcement is challenging. Ritual cleansing associated with pollution creates structured paths to social redemption that moral offenses typically lack. This mechanistic approach to purification establishes clear restoration procedures, enables public acknowledgement of transgressions, and maintains social harmony through standardized reconciliation. Interestingly, when purification rituals become primary mechanisms for handling moral transgressions, they can introduce unexpected flexibility into social systems. Some cultures develop patterns where individuals engage in forbidden activities, knowing that ritual cleansing provides a reliable path to restoration. The quest for absolute purity ultimately becomes hard and dead as stone. While humans crave clear categories, experience defies such rigidity. Sexual purity particularly leads to contradiction. It's literally barren. The body isn't a slightly porous jug. Attempting to select only inoffensive aspects distorts reality. Like gardens requiring compost rather than sterility, religious rituals incorporating pollutions acknowledge this fundamental truth. Primitive religions must recognize death's inevitability while promising ritual efficacy. Three strategies protect ritual from skepticism: blaming external forces, requiring perfect execution, or shifting perspective entirely. This third approach, where a religion that normally promises material benefits suddenly disparages materialistic objectives, offers the most profound protection. When someone freely embraces death symbols or death itself, power for good follows. These acts confront the mystery that suffering and death are integral to nature. This reveals why corruption must sometimes be enshrined in sacred contexts. We create systems of order to make sense of our chaotic world, drawing lines between clean and unclean. Yet profound wisdom lies in recognizing when these boundaries must be transcended. Our greatest strength may come not from maintaining perfect purity, but from embracing the very disorder we fear, finding in our vulnerabilities and contradictions our deepest sources of meaning.